Ladies and gentlemen, live from WFV studio here at the bottom of Keating of Fordham University, it is pound for pound, yet another installment. We've been gone for a little while, but now we are back. I am going to be your A-host for this week, Madi Dembele. That is M-A-D-I for those who are just wondering. Nobody cares, but I'm just going to throw it out there. Joined by the one and only MMA super god, Zachariah Cordova. His Denver Broncos are good. I love the smile on his face. Ooh. Zach, how you feeling?
Man, I'm feeling good. You know, it's a Thursday. We're getting through it, though. Yes, got a lot of schoolwork. We're starting to get into midterm season, but I'm feeling good on this Thursday. We had an all right card last weekend. Alex Pereira, you know, came through once again. But like you mentioned, man, my Broncos are finally a competitive team. So I couldn't be happier about that. Obviously, we can't really talk about that. This is an MMA podcast, but can't be mad at it. That's a bonus for me.
Broncos country, let's ride in. They're 3-2. Oh, man. Best defense in the league. I mean, it's ridiculous how they're playing, but this is an MMA podcast. We'll save the NFL for NFL on Friday. Those guys over there. But again, a very, very, I would say, okay card from UFC 307. The fight at the top of the card, fight of the night honors. It did break my heart a little bit because you just fall in love with Khalil Roundtree. Shout out to Zach Cordova for his tweet that the whole world saw. So, I mean, like, it breaks your heart to see that. But, you know, he has the stuff of champion when you're able to fight through what he was going to fight through. But before we get to that, I think we should start at the bottom, Zach. I think we're just going to run through main card for this episode.
Oh, before we do that,
please,
I do want to get into a little bit, just quickly, if we could get into the Stephen Thompson and Joaquin Buckley fight.
Thing.
Man, that hurts to see Wonderboy get knocked out like that. But I've been saying it from the start, and I keep telling you because I got to keep reminding you every week.
And
every
Andrew.
Time Buckley fights. And Andrew. Andrew's not here anymore, but if he's somewhere out there in the world listening, I remember telling you two about this months ago. When he first dropped down to 170, I told you guys that Joaquin Buckley was a problem. I knew the size was too much for him at middleweight. And once he got to welterweight, where he was more a little bit his more natural size, he was guys were more his, because his biggest problem at middleweight was getting inside. He couldn't get close to people. He just was, his frame was too small. The reach didn't really help him at all. So he wasn't getting inside. He wasn't able to land his power shots. Welterweight, it's a different story. And you see that power is carried over from middleweight, and he's a tank. And when you take a guy like Stephen Thompson, who's so good at distance control and keeping you on the outside, this is a matchup where it screams, okay, Buckley's going to have a lot of problems. He's not going to be able to get in. He's not going to be able to land his power shots. And that's how it was looking for most of the night. Wonderboy, how old is he? 43 now?
40,
something like that?
41. I was incorrect. It's 41 for Stephen Wonderboy Thompson.
And he still looks good, like really good. And he was keeping Buckley outside. Buckley was implementing some of the wrestling, obviously, trying to get to Wonderboy's weaker side. Everyone thinks they can expose the grappling on him, but Wonderboy was getting up for the most part. He wasn't getting dominated in the grappling situations, but it took Buckley just blitzing in against the fence and just landing a giant right hand to knock Wonderboy down. And it's sad, man.
It
it's
is sad
to see Wonderboy go
to
down
tell you
like
the
that.
Truth, I think it's the last point that you have to highlight. Knocking Wonderboy down, that's like seeing a four-leaf clover or maybe even Bigfoot. I saw the picture on Twitter. Like, it doesn't happen very often. Stephen Wonderboy Thompson essentially brought karate to the forefront in the UFC. Nobody thought it could work, but he made it work for, I mean, millennia now. 41 years of age. I just fact-checked it. 83 February 11th. Yep. But he looks fresh. You remember him talking about how fresh he looked and how fresh he felt when he fought Kevin Holland not too long ago. And he's still around. But Joaquin Buckley, I do have to eat crow here. Zach did tell me I didn't believe in him. I know he was a little bit smaller for middleweight, but I thought he should be able to make up the ground with his, like, brolic frame and his punch power. So I was like, if you're not making it at middleweight, it's just a weight bully, really, if you go down to welterweight. He goes down to welterweight, and it's guys that are actually his size. It's not a weight bully, and he's running through. What's the fight streak off the top of my head? Is it?
I think he's won five now at welterweight.
I don't know if six includes with Stephen Boyd. If five, six around that range, Joaquin Buckley, I will eat crow. He does look good. He's fighting every single year. Last time out, I think it was, I'm trying to remember the fight, but Joaquin Buckley, I'm sorry.
Five now for him in a row.
Five in a row for Joaquin Buckley. Ladies and gentlemen, he has arrived. Again, he fights all the time. I mean, the last one coming up, Ruzi Boev and Vicente Luque, which is also a really, really good fight. But Yeah, yeah, he's good at welterweight. He's good. He looks lively. He looks fresh.
And let me add, first fighter to show up in the purple shorts and perform.
I don't know if I like that.
Because the other two have worn them is Brendan Allen and Ian Garry.
Oh.
And if you remember Ian Garry's performance at UFC 303, people weren't happy.
Yeah.
Brendan Allen just lost in the purple shorts. Well, Joaquin Buckley was the first guy to go out there and get a finish in the purple shorts. I don't know how you don't like him, man. I like the colored shorts. I like the different colored shorts. I think it's fun that the UFC is finally starting to branch out a little bit in terms of the fighter kits and like letting guys wear a little, having a little bit more freedom in choosing what they want to wear.
I just think it was the color. Like, if it was like a little bit lighter, like a lilac, the dark purple, I don't know. I don't know.
I like the dark purple, man. You're being a little bit of a diva. I'm not going to lie to you.
I'm sorry. I have the Pico on. Of course I'm a diva. I'm a diva, Zach. But, yeah, thoughts on that, overall thoughts on that fight. I mean, like, he's just something to be reckoned with. Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, perhaps the ultimate gatekeeper there, and to get a win like that on your resume is something special.
It's a big fight for Buckley coming up next.
It is. It has to be. He's a big name at welterweight. Ladies and gentlemen, don't blink. Joaquin Buckley has arrived. But, Zach, I think we're going to move on here. And I want to talk some Jose Aldo, because if we talk about heartbreakers, and to see a legend, I don't want to say fall, but to see them lose, it never feels good. You always think back to Jose Aldo. Well, really, you always think back to Jose Aldo and the McGregor loss. But before that, hadn't been beaten in 10 years, and now he's still here. He's still good. I mean, his last fight out, he looked fresh, and he looked amazing, especially for a guy who is 38 years of age. I thought he was way older. But he's only 38. That's September 9th of 1986. I mean, he looked great his last time out against, I believe it was Jonathan Martinez. Yep. I want to say it was the last time around. Yeah, he was able to get his boxing off. He still looked to have all of his power that we're so accustomed to seeing from Jose Aldo. But then he goes out and he loses to Mario Bautista in a fight where I don't know if it was emotions overriding it, but I thought he won.
Hmm. Now, everyone tends to think that. Now,
I think he won,
here's
man.
The thing online that I feel has bothered me a little bit, because a lot of MMA fans are very, very upset with Mario Bautista, which obviously he's fighting against a legend, the King of Rio. Everybody knows, everyone wants Aldo to win.
Yeah.
And it's the way that he gets it done in terms of just kind of leaning on him on the fence and just kind of like doing just enough to keep the position but not advancing it. 0-for-10 on takedown attempts, and he just kept trying over and over again. People don't like that. People were making threats to him, everything.
Excessive.
Banishing him to the UFC apex, whatever, they're wishing the worst on him. But I don't think it's right to do that, because Bautista, he's going out to win. And there's a part of, okay, yeah, Bautista's just laying on him on the fence, and like he's making a boring fight. But you get a bonus check if you win. You get paid to show, and you get paid to win. This is a guy who's taking care of his family. He's trying to get his money. He's fighting against a legend. He's obviously something he saw against Merab, and this is where my take is. Everyone talks about Aldo's takedown defense. Stuffs all 10 takedowns on Saturday. Doesn't really have a problem with the takedowns. He has shown a tendency in his past couple fights to accept the position against the cage and not try to get out.
He's
and
38.
That's what happened on Saturday. He's 38, yes. But at the same time, if you're easily exposable to, okay, if I can just hold this guy against the fence, he's not going to try to get out. He's not, I don't want to say he's not good enough to get out, but his takedown defense is built to stay up and just stay upright. That's really it. Not get away, not break a grip, nothing. And he kind of allowed Bautista to just lay on him on the fence. There's a point where he allowed him to do it.
I guess that is a fair enough point. Again, I talked about attrition, because once you're 38, maybe you just don't have, I don't want to say the will to fight back, but sometimes you just get tired.
Yep.
But with Bautista, if that's the case, and if you know that, you're not able to take him down. I mean, like, I know it's muscle memory, right? Great takedown defense. You get the wide base on the cage, so the guy can't take you down. But you're a significantly younger guy, and you know that Jose Aldo's going to do this. You can't take him down, not once out of 10 attempts.
And and that's also on Bautista's fault, because I feel... They came in promising a bloodbath, whatever, and he lays on him on the fence for the whole fight.
Yeah,
it's yes on part to Bautista for not giving everyone the performance that they wanted, but he won the fight, and I think that whether people like it or not, he won the fight on judges' scorecards. He had almost seven and a half minutes of control time. That's almost the whole fight. There's got to be a point where you got to say, okay, Aldo's got to learn how to get off the cage, because he did the same exact thing to Merab and he loses another decision that everybody was calling for Merab's head after that. He just tried to take him down the whole fight, laid against him against the cage, the whole fight, and just let it happen. That's kind of on Aldo, too. Aldo's got to be able to get away from those exchanges, and I don't think he's really ever shown in the UFC an ability to really break away from the cage. And I think it's at this point, there's so much film on a guy like Jose Aldo.
Yeah.
And when you're in the gym with your coaches breaking down film on how you're going to game plan for a fight, I think that everyone's looking at, okay, this guy's easily exploitable. He's just going to, if you hold him against the fence, he can't break the position.
Which is where I wanted to go next with you, because before we move on to the next fight, Zach, this has been a conversation that's been going on in UFC circles. At that point, do you start standing guys up? Like, where are you specifically on standing guys up, breaking them up when there's particularly no action? Yeah.
So currently, the rule set would allow what Bautista did.
Yeah.
And what he did is a favorable look.
But how do you feel
seven
about
and a, and that's where I'm getting to. 7.5 minutes of control time.
Mm.
I think if there is to be something done about it, because I do think, like, there are guys in the world who are incredible grapplers who, if they could, they will lay on you for all 15 minutes and win with pure control time. And if they allow them to do it, they'll do it. And it's by the rules, it's allowed. And you're able to do it, you're technically winning the fight. But it's the ultimate fighting championship. It's mixing all of the martial arts, seeing who is the best, what style's the best. They got to implement something in the rules to say, hey, you can't just like hold on to this guy against the cage and just like do just enough to maintain the position. And like, we're not talking damaging shots, we're talking even Merab, when he, I didn't get to talk about that because we didn't have an episode that week of the way he beat Sean, just laying on somebody on the cage and just lightly kneeing them in the back of the leg. Like that's you've got a dominant position and you're holding the guy in it, but it's about damage. And that's what has been stressed over and over and over again by the UFC, is damage rules all. And if you're holding someone up against the cage in a dominant position and they're not able to break three, and you're not taking advantage of it to make damage or do anything, you got to look to finish a fight at all times. And if you're not looking to finish the fight, if you're just holding on for dear life, which once we got to the third round kind of looked like what Bautista was doing, that's when you kind of have to start separating guys and start giving the benefit to the other fighters. Well, this guy's just stalling. Because that's where. Sorry, I'll let you go in a second.
No,
but that's kind of where boxing's been too. Where
good point.
Guys are very willing to just grab a clinch hold that. Devin Haney.
It's a 1-2 hold.
It's a 1-2 hold. 1-2 hold. You're gonna get close to me. Yeah. I'm gonna grab you. And I don't want to say that's where the sport is going, but I could see it head that way if there's not something done about it. Bautista won because he followed the rules and he did what he needed to do to win. That was his game plan. He saw something that he can exploit in Aldo's game, and he went out there and he beat a legend. He has probably a higher profile. Maybe the performance wasn't necessarily the most amazing thing ever, but like, regardless, he beat Aldo. He's gonna fight up in the rankings for his next fight, and when he does that, he gets closer to getting to a title. And he gets his win money.
By hook or by crook, a W is a W, and it inches closer and closer to UFC gold. It's a major conversation that's going on in UFC circles. There's a lot of implications there. But one fight that did not have a lot of implications because it ended before we could even blink, Roman Dolidze. And Kevin Holland. Congrats to Roman Dolidze. I mean, like, 2-fight win streak now, going back to beating Anthony Smith pretty handily, Smith. I'm mad at Kevin Holland because there's always a mantra.
Really?
Yeah. This is why. First off, I hope he's all right. I know the rib injury, something serious. It's almost like a car injury. You're not able to really go if a torso extremity is out of place. This is why I'm mad at him. You know, there's a mantra you have to live by in life. You're here for a good time, not a long time. And with UFC fighters, the good time should be attaining UFC gold. Injuries are always a looming threat. That's why when you are healthy, try to become something. Kevin Holland, I don't like the fact that he's so satisfied with just being a gatekeeper, because he's so talented. He makes fights so weird that he could be a champion. Like, I'm watching Drakus, be a champion. Like, Kevin Holland's of that elk. He could make anything weird, and he's a wild card, and he could be so much more than just what he's satisfied with. And yes, your aspirations are your aspirations in the sport, but I think when you're that talented, you owe the world you owe us that talent. You owe us that artistry. So I want you to be so much more before like the injury starts setting in. Mm-hmm. Is that too much to ask, Zach?
So here's my take on it, because I'm going to defer a little bit from you. I think there's two types of fighters when you get into the UFC.
Okay.
You got guys who are going to be champion one day or aspiring, aiming. The way they fight is about being a champion one day.
Yeah.
And there's guys who just live to fight and go in there, hey, I'm going to put on a spectacle. Because here's like and just kind of bringing up the main event and what we just talked about, the Bautista fight, two extremes. Khalil walked away with that fight, even though he lost. He still won because everybody, just because of the performance, this guy is incredible. Everyone's watching his next fight now. Why do we love Kevin Holland? Because he's weird, because he does all this crazy stuff. Kevin Holland doesn't care about winning the belt. Kevin Holland just wants to go out there and put on a fun fight. And for a while, that's exactly what Justin Gaethje's good enough to win a title, and he's positioned himself to win a title. But don't forget what Justin Gaethje is. He's a guy who goes in there who doesn't fight super technically sound. He's just chaos.
Yeah.
And that's why he's so good, is he is chaos. He will go through the fire, and he's good at that chaos. That's why he's in line for a championship belt. But I think the mindset is, I'm going to go out there and put on a fun fight, because everybody, and you can make a very, very honest living off of that in the UFC, because if you have people who like the way you fight, people will tune in every time you fight, no matter what.
Two things. That's an excellent point. With Gaethje specifically, because I do think they arrive at the same place, meaning Kevin Holland, Justin Gaethje, like, I want to put on a fight for people.
Yeah.
But I think they come from two different places. I think Justin, I don't want to say takes it more seriously, because you see interviews with Kevin Holland, and it's almost as if, like, he's just there. It's to have fun, even, like, the correct verbiage. Not just to have fun, but just, I'm here, I'm fighting, I'm cool with it. Justin Gaethje, I could see that he has championship aspirations. He's banging it out because he wants to be champion. I think Kevin Holland is banging it out just because he wants us to appreciate his personality. Yeah.
Well, it's just I think that, and personally, I think that's what he is. That's who he is as a fighter.
But eventually, we're going to want more, Zach. Does he want more for us?
Can you not be satisfied with the exciting fights from Kevin Holland all the time? Because
yes,
we get fun fights every time, even though this one ends in the way that it does. We get fun fights every time Kevin Holland's name on the card, you're tuning in.
But do I want those fights? But am I always going to want those fights against, like, a Michael Olajuwon? Or eventually, do I want to see that against, like, a top contender, Kevin Holland, like fighting for something? He's fun, he's crazy, he's a wild card, but it's at the top end, not just the crumbs of the division, I guess.
I think there's a value in being able to put on a show no matter who you're fighting, and I think that's exactly the mindset Kevin Holland has, is I don't care who I'm in there against. That's why he fought Khamzat on short notice. Khamzat just takes him. He doesn't care who he's fighting. He's just going to go in there and he's going to brawl. And I think there's a respect you have to have for it, because there's so few champions in the UFC. Not everybody can be a champion. Not everybody has the skill set to be. If we're talking Kevin Holland as a possible contender, do you think he can really go out there
and beat
a Dragos Duplessis?
It's different. It's different in terms of, because he's certainly talented.
I'm not disputing that he's not talented or that he's talented.
Yeah.
I think he's a really good fighter.
Yeah. The talent's there. He's young. I think he's only like 30. He may only be like 30. Like 29. Like 29, 30, 31, 31. 30. 31.
Yeah.
31 years of age. He certainly has the talent. 6'3", long arm. I mean, he could put it down the pipe with a nice 1-2. He has the power to put somebody down. I mean, he has a certain, like, poise and craziness, even when you have him, like, in a rear naked choke or something. He has the flair, like,
but
do I think he could make himself a contender in that
season? When we're looking at him against the top five, do you see him competing against? I mean, he fights at both welterweight and middleweight.
Let's do this. Can we crawl before we walk? Can he get ranked first? Like, this is what I'm saying. Like, he's unranked. That guy should not be unranked.
But
he should be in the top
15.
But
he's still
an
attraction every time he fights, and I know he's getting paid for it. Whether there's a number next to his name or not, you're tuning in for a Kevin Holland fight. Same way that when you see Drew Dober fighting, he doesn't have to have a number next to his
name. Drew Dober's excellent.
You're tuning in for
a
Drew Dober fight because anything could happen. And I think that even like guys like Sean O'Malley messed around and became a champion.
Yeah.
But before that, we didn't think Sean was going to win a belt. Were we all tuning in when Sean O'Malley watched? Was he on every main card he was put on? He was the main attraction most of the time for a lot of people whenever he fought. And I think that there's a value in that, especially in this company, is having a guy who, he's not going to headline the card, Maybe he'll headline. He can headline a fight night, but he's not going to headline a pay-per-view card. But when he's thrown in there as a second or third fighter or even an opener, people are getting pumped because Kevin Holland's fighting that night because, hey, we're going to get a good fight. Whether this guy wins or loses, we're going to get a good fight. And I think that you can't really look down. I think that there's guys who are cut to be champions, and there's guys who are cut to go out there and put on a fun fight, and they arguably could make as much money as that just because of popularity-wise.
We're going to have to respectfully disagree. I think that's an excellent point, Zach. I do get that.
I get what you're saying. I do get what you're saying because it's like, how could you not want more if you are as skilled as a Kevin Holland?
As you owe the world. It's almost like, I mean, Kevin Holland, like, Sugar Sean O'Malley's a good point because he wasn't something until he was.
Yeah.
Kevin, be something. You have the talent to be. Go be that something. Yeah. I think that's where I am at, but I love your point. I think Kevin Holland, he's an interesting paradox. Another person who could be described interesting, making her splashy, I don't want to say debut, but still getting her feet wet in the UFC, Kayla Harrison. She takes home the win against Ketlin Vieira, and it was
It was pretty dominant.
It was pretty dominant. I think her personality's growing on me.
Yeah.
I think it's much of the same when you talk about a Kayla Harrison. Like, it's not my favorite fight around.
Yeah.
Amanda Nunes talking about she wants something different, something new. She'll come out and fight Kayla Harrison if that's the case.
If
she could get the belt. She beat Holly Holm last time around. I still have a little bit of a sour taste in my mouth. So I'm still eating sour grape from that. Where are you on Kayla Harrison? I think
she looked human this weekend. I'm not going to lie to you. She won this fight pretty convincingly, and she didn't. I don't think she necessarily had too much of a struggle doing it.
Yeah.
I think she looked human, though. I think she looked more beatable than she's ever really looked in terms of any of her fights, because you see most of the time, I mean, despite the one she lost at the PFL, but despite that, you just see her throwing girls around and just dominating everybody, just being an enforcer. And she was 2 for 8 on takedown attempts this weekend. She had almost 8 minutes of control time. She outstruck this other girl. Do I see her? Yes, I think she's the clear-cut number one contender in this division. She 100% should fight for the belt next. I don't think that she's necessarily the second coming of Amanda Nunes. I think she's good, and I think she could take anybody down in that division with her judo skills. I think her striking's a little bit suspect, and I think that was a real stat they mentioned this weekend. She didn't throw a punch until like 2017, 2018, because she was only doing judo in the Olympics.
Olympic judo.
The only reason she came back was because she was feeling post-Olympic depression because understandable. You win these titles and there's nothing really else to do in the world of judo. So she switches to MMA, starts to learn how to strike a little bit, takes a striking class, and then finds out that, hey, I'm one of the best in the world. I think that she could be exploitable in the striking. I think anybody who could kind of withstand her forward pressure or just not get taken down as easily by her can put up a good fight against her, but I also just think that she's such an enforcer, she just kind of gets her way.
Let's just call a spade a spade. She's one-dimensional.
Yeah.
She's one-dimensional.
Yeah, I agree. That's what I'm saying. That's the short way to say what I said.
Yeah, let's just say what it is. She's one-dimensional. Mm-hmm. Like, uber strong, like we talk about, like we jokes, like her traps and her biceps aren't insane. Like, she's strong-armed, like she's going to pick you up and she's going to throw you Olympic-level judoka. Lightweight champion, the PFL, if I'm not mistaken, as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, 34 years of age, but like low miles, 34 years of age. She's just getting her feet wet, as we said before. 5'8", good size, but it's not, there's nothing there. Like, outside of the judo expertise, like, you talk about peak level of doing something, like, she's a master of something, but she is not a jack of all trades. And in the UFC, it's starting to get to the point where you can't just be this, I don't want to, like, one-dimensional. Like, Leon Edwards, I don't think will ever be champion again because he's just a pure striker. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it's aiming more towards, like, guys like Shavkat. Like, guys who are just variety is the spice of life. And I just think that she's just an out-of-place fighter. She's just out of time.
Like, I think her judo is by far the best.
By far the best.
And I just think that she's got to learn, for one, she talks about the elbows a lot and how that's her favorite thing to do. I think if she really, because I don't feel like we really saw too much of that this weekend in terms of her performance. No. If she can really turn that up in terms of when she takes people down, taking the most advantage of getting damage out of those exchanges, she can definitely be a lot better, and that's her stronghold. Now looking at the now current champion and new Juliana Pena.
There you go.
Can Kayla Harrison beat her in that matchup? Yeah, I think Kayla Harrison could become the champion just being one-dimensional.
Yeah.
And in her case, I think it's okay because I think she's that good at judo. I just don't think really anyone else stops unless Amanda Nunes comes back. I think Amanda could definitely exploit it. But I don't think Juliana Pena necessarily can stop it. I don't think anybody else in the top five can really necessarily stop it because she's just that good at judo.
Yeah.
It's just... I'm trying to think of the word. It leaves more to be desired.
It
I
does
feel like,
leave more to be
but
desired.
But at the same time, that's what she's good at. She's got the Olympic medals in judo, and that's what she's going to do.
Her judoka talent is pitched so high. It's like she took all her attributes and just put it into straight judo. It's pitched so high. Everything else, really, you're not getting much of. And until somebody, because it is beatable. If it's a one-trick pony, you could beat that. But there's not that person that can do it. And until then, Kayla Harrison... She's going to be a problem.
She's on the path. She's on the path. She should be fighting for the title next.
Yeah.
She should.
I don't see anyone else does. Fair enough. And as new faces come into the UFC, old faces have retired. That is going to be Raquel Penn. Excuse me. That was Carla Esparza. Excuse me. She retired. Not Raquel Pennington. I thought that was going to be a nice little segue there. I messed up. But Juliana Pena. As new champions try to make their way to the belt, Juliana Pena snatches it from Raquel Pennington. And Juliana Pena, she's exciting. Like, her personality, I love her. Like, A lot of people don't love her because of her personality. It's zero sum with her. But, I mean, the surprise, like, the upset of, like, the century beating, taking down Amanda Nunes. Of all time, perhaps, there. Taking her down. I mean, she puts her money where her mouth is there with Juliana Pena. But in this fight, I feel like Raquel Pennington,
she never really
struck me as a, like when she held the belt, it always felt weird. It was circumstantial more than her skill. And I'm not too impressed. This wasn't more so like, I'm not giving props to Juliana. I'm just saying you took it from Raquel.
It always feels like that, though, when a really long-time champion goes in. Like, even with the lightweight division, when Khabib laid down the belts and retired.
Yeah.
I felt the same way about Charles Oliveira. When he came in and won the belt, this guy just took Khabib's belt. He's not a real champion. Well, he goes out there and defends it a couple times, and Raquel just didn't do that. And when she was kind of, I hate to say it, she was a placeholder. When Amanda laid the belt down, it's just kind of, okay, well, somebody's got to take it. She fought Mayra Buena Silva, who I don't consider to be a very good fighter. I just think she's a grappling ace who can't really do anything else.
Yeah.
And Raquel Pennington went in, won the belt in a very boring title fight. And she came in. I just think she was a placeholder. Now, people are arguing because it was a split decision in terms of who actually won the fight.
Why?
I think it comes down to that round one. I think there are rounds that are clear-cut 2-2 for both fighters here. But I think when you look at round one, which I think is it's the round that kind of determines who would win that fight. I think when you rewatch round one, Raquel doesn't land anything really of substance, like really anything significant, where Pena was able to kind of get her boxing going. I feel like she outboxed the boxer in that first round.
Yeah.
She was landing her jab. She landed a couple right hands. And I think both of them didn't really do anything significant that round, but if you want to look at it like that, Juliana outstruck her, and Juliana just had a better round. She landed more shots in that round.
Because what this fight was sold off of, essentially, was it's going to be a gritty fight between two gritty girls.
Right.
I don't know if I got that taste in my mouth. I just felt like it was one fighter who's significantly better, but she just didn't demoralize the second one as she was supposed to.
Yeah.
Because if we go back to Raquel Pennington, like, I'm trying to think of like significant fights she's had since 2020, like Macy Chasson off the top, Aspen Ladd. She just beat the lady that
Buena
Kayla
Silva.
Harrison. Yeah. Kayla Harrison. She beat Ketlin Vieira. She just beat the girl that Kayla Harrison just beat. Like, it's not there with her, and I felt like if you were Juliana Pena, you had to show more. Like, because again, it's not just who you face; it's how you beat them. Like, people like Raquel Pennington, you're supposed to put her away.
Yeah, she had the sub attempt, and I think Raquel just showed good a good defense when someone's on your back. She defended it very well. She did knock down Juliana Pena at one part in this fight.
Yeah, she did. She did.
But Juliana recovered well, and just, she's gritty. She's gritty. She came forward, and I just feel like Raquel didn't really match the energy back, and I think that's why Pena got the nod. In talking in terms of people not liking Pena, I think for this division, you need somebody like Pena to be kind of at the top because it spices it up. When Nunes leaves, what do you really do?
You got to make another one.
You lose a legend, not just a legend, the best fighter in women's MMA, one of the greatest fighters of all time.
Yeah.
And you need someone like Juliana to come in and I feel like revive the division, get it, just spice things up a little bit.
She's good for the division.
Especially because her and Kayla were going back and forth at the press conference. I think that leads to a pretty interesting buildup.
So now you have something there. I mean, whether you like her, whether you love her or hate her, Juliana Pena is now the champ at bantamweight there. As new champions arise, the same old faces stay champ. Alex Pereira, Poatan. He's able to get it done and defend his belt against Khalil Roundtree Jr. And Khalil had him in the first half. I think the first two rounds went to Khalil. But in terms of Khalil Roundtree, like, Zach, I always go back and look at your posts. Like, you see him crying, and it's like your life matters. And it's like, you know, a man who has nothing. Because I always talk about this. This is why we love this sport. Mm. Because, like, it's the most profound expression of the human spirit. Like, not everyone's a basketball player or an NBA player. Not everyone's an NFL or football player. But everyone in some semblance is a fighter. And Khalil Roundtree has been fighting his entire life. He's battled substance abuse and obesity. And now he finds himself three rounds away from taking the belt off of Alex Pereira. He lost the gas tank at the end. But you saw his face, and it was perhaps one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. Because it just shows you, like a warrior unmatched, shows you so much heart.
Yeah.
But fight of the night for me. I mean, like, your takeaways from it? I don't know.
Man, like I said, Khalil lost the fight, but he won.
He won.
Because I'm telling you right now, everybody is going to tune into his next fight. He gave Alex arguably the hardest fight he has had outside of his career, aside from maybe the second Adesanya fight.
Easy knocked him out.
And the Jan Blachowicz fight.
Yeah.
But even when you look at that second Izzy fight, it was going the same way that fifth round went. Pereira was in attack mode. He was moving forward. He damaged Izzy's leg. He easily compromised Izzy's leg, I would even say. Izzy was hurt pretty quickly. He's moving slow and then just possumed up and then caught him with a perfect counter there. But I think Khalil was just like, I'm going to take one, but I'm going to give one at the same time. And I think that was the game plan going in is, all right, if we could brave the storm a little bit early, I can land first. And he was definitely getting to him. He was landing early. He was giving Pereira some problems out of that southpaw stance there. Just quick. Very quick.
Super
That's the fastest we've ever seen Khalil Roundtree. And I think he was really, really prepared for this fight. He took this one. I mean, it was, of course, title fight. He was taking it incredibly seriously. But we saw a new Khalil Roundtree in there this weekend. Even though he gassed out, we were in Utah. Everybody was going to gas out. It was written in the stars before. We knew this wasn't going fine.
His evolution as a fighter, because like you talk about him coming up through the ranks and then he gets knocked out. I want to say he gets elbowed by Johnny Walker, someone at light heavyweight, and then he goes to Thailand. He's fighting like a Thai now, and now he's moving swift. I mean, like a guy that big, that much muscle, but he's moving that swift. It's like Mike Tyson and then Khalil Roundtree, like that much muscle, but moving so fast, speed and power at the same time. And he finds himself in the championship fight. He's too much for Alex Pereira to handle the first two rounds. It's just a gas tank. I would have loved to see him incorporate more leg kicks just to get, just so when it was time for Alex to go on the front foot, he just didn't have it. But that's for you to learn, Khalil. Yeah. And he's so young in this sport too. 34, again, low miles. But it's like, I think they go back to Jamal Hill.
Yeah, I agree.
That has to be the next fight because you got to attack this iron while it's hot. You got to make sure that this guy's in championship contender as long as possible. He was number 8 going into this fight. His stock has skyrocketed.
Oh, by
and
far.
There's a lot of implications with Jamal Hill because Jamal Hill wants to run it back with Alex Pereira for a belt that he gave up due to injury. He was top dog before Alex even came. So right now you're looking at those three guys specifically, Alex being the one, maybe Jamal, maybe Khalil, as the three guys that you really have to keep in rotation. Jamal, Khalil Roundtree, that's the next fight at light heavyweight. It has to happen.
I agree. I fully agree, but you can't talk about, we're talking about Khalil Roundtree. You got to talk about Alex, too. I mean, third defense, right? Third defense, I want to say, of his title, fighting third time this year, saving. This is now the third event he has now saved in a row. Like, the guy is. I hate to use the word because it's so TikTok-ish, but I just. Walkout, him standing in the cage, dude, the aura of a champion. Whenever you see Alex in the cage, it's just like, oh man, this guy scares me. And I'm sitting in my basement at home watching it.
Five fight win streak, right? Blachowicz, Jiří twice, Jamal.
Yeah.
Khalid.
And.
You can't.
Just taking. He's a titan.
How do you.
He's taking everybody out, and he just doesn't. He doesn't just do it by. Like any other fighter who does it, he's in there to take everybody's head off. And there's a weird thing with Alex Pereira that he quite literally gets better as the fight goes on.
Like,
and that's not expected when you're in Utah because of the altitude. He's in the fourth round looking more dangerous than he did in the first round.
Insane.
It's scary. Every round you go with that guy, it just gets scarier because there's nobody who just hits nearly as hard as him. It's just that one shot shut off that he could throw at any moment. And he broke, I think, like every curse that the UFC had. the UFC cover curse for the video game. He I think fighters over 35 defending belts. That's another big thing. He defended the belt once again while being 37 years old, and he just doesn't look like he's regressing. He just hits so damn hard.
37 years old, still going up.
Yeah.
15 fights into his professional career. Yeah.
And what do you do with him at this point? Because he's not gonna he doesn't want to go to middleweight anymore. He said he wants to at some point, but he doesn't want to right now because he trains with Strickland. He knows Strickland's getting the shot next. He doesn't want to get in his way. He said that in the cage this
weekend. It has to be a Drakus fight. Move up to heavyweight.
But that's the only option now, because if he doesn't want to go to middleweight because Strickland's fighting for him, he doesn't want to get in Strickland's way. He said he'd be down to do heavyweight, but he's also, I'll stay here at light heavyweight.
Do we think Sean Strickland wins it? Because I think at a certain point, you have to give Drakus his flowers as well. He makes it weird.
Strickland arguably won the first fight. I'm curious to see that fight again.
This is true.
I want to see the adjustments both guys make. I think Strickland arguably won that first fight.
I think so as well. Okay.
But back to this, in Alex's future, I think Ankalaev's got to be next.
It has to be. Someone has to test the wrestling.
Especially, yeah, because he's a grappler. Alex has fought primarily strikers. If he and Ankalaev, not a smart decision if he actually does it, but he says he's going to stand with him.
No, just no. No, Izzy took him down. Ankalaev, you don't. I know this is an ego sport where it's a bunch of grown men punching each other in the face, getting knocked out. Just stick to your game plan. Wrestle this guy. Israel Adesanya took this guy down. You certainly can. And just push Alex to a place where, not where he's, I won't say uncomfortable, but a place that he's not accustomed to.
Yeah.
You have to try to go get it by yourself because you can be champion.
Yeah.
This is, it's not an unrealistic expectation. Yeah. Go get the belt. It's there. It's, you have the best chance.
I'm telling you right now, the first time he gets hit, that mindset goes out the window.
I know.
He's not going to want to stand with him anymore after a round.
But he's not gonna like be alive. So like Alex is gonna put you to sleep if he touches you. The left hook, like it's the tall, lean, like it's not the big muscle. It's the tall, lean guys that could get you.
I just wonder if Alex's style changes a little bit in a matchup where he knows he could get taken down, because we've seen it in the past where strikers are a little bit more hesitant to throw because they're afraid of getting taken down, and that threat is definitely there with Ankalaev. So could Alex maybe just be slightly more hesitant when he's there? Can Ankalaev, because strikers every now and then will be given a run for their money on their feet by wrestlers because of the threat of the takedown.
Mm-hmm.
Because the hands are just naturally lower.
Yeah.
They're ready to stuff a takedown. That could give Alex problems. The way Alex is fighting right now, though, it's hard to imagine him losing.
Because
when he's in there, he's just such a scary, scary guy.
He sucks the energy out of the octagon. Like, Literally. Everybody feels it. Like, Sean Strickland.
The aura of a champion. Everybody in the arena knows what's about to go down when Alex Pereira is in the octagon.
Like, Jamal Hill's talking all this mess before the fight. He kicks Alex in, like, the groin area. And then he looks at me and he goes, I'm so sorry. Because he knows what's gonna come. And it comes literally 3 seconds later. After he shoes Herb Dean, it's like, it's so ridiculous with this guy. I've never, like, the magnetism, I can't find a match for it.
Yeah.
Alex Pereira is just ridiculous. Ankalaev, if you can't do it, I don't know.
To close this.
Please.
Do we agree Alex Pereira is the face of the UFC right
Yes,
now?
He has
Is he
to.
The biggest star in the sport?
Sugar Sean is out of the picture. Connor's off. Stand your base. Stand your base. I mean, so
Can we please give Connor, like, I don't care at this point if he never fights again. Please give him, like, a TV show or something where he just talks about hypothetical matchups and he's just like, the way he's talking about Ilya, I'm grabbing by the scruff of his chest and slap until his nose falls. Like, please just let me hear that, like, in a TV show or something for a little bit.
It's hilarious.
Like, if he's not going to fight again, let him talk silly about people. But
don't do drugs. Don't do drugs.
Back to the point. Yes, Alex Pereira is the biggest
star. He's
the
face of the
UFC.
Man. Like, at a certain point, like, what else are you going to do with this guy? Unless John's on his way out, like, there's no one. Like, it's this guy. Like, there's no one else.
Unfortunately, he is 37, and he will age out at some point. But for now,
the last thing to go is your power. I could personally see this guy, 43 years old, just still left hook,
defending
left hook,
that
left
belt.
Defending the belt, 11 title defense.
11 title defense is all KO.
Fighting three times a year.
And we're talking about him as the GOAT at that point. Like, if he could go, and here's one thing I will say. If he can go up to heavyweight, and he's going to have to beat. I don't think John Jones sticks around after MSG. If he goes up and beats Dom Aspinall, which I don't think he does. I think Aspinall rugby tackles him and just, like, takes him down.
Yeah, Aspinall finishes his fights in, like, 3 seconds.
Oh, my God, dude, if he does it.
Then he may actually
we're talking about the GOAT.
We are talking about the GOAT.
We're talking about
John.
The greatest of all time. And I think he's whether or not he does do it, he's in that conversation.
It's like Barry Bonds. Alex Pereira speed running his way to, like, UFC, like, GOAT.
All-time
goatness.
Greatness.
Like, it's ridiculous. But that's why we love this sport. We love to see grown men and grown women just knock each other out because of the fighter-warrior spirit, as we said again. And I enjoy talking about it with one of my very closest friends, Zachariah Cordova. Bradley Byrne was behind the boards doing his thing there. I have been Mahdi Dembele. And again, tune in every single week. We're going to try to be more consistent. Sorry, guys. We are seniors in college. It gets hard here. We're getting fat. We're just eating. We're just suffering through midterms. It's coming up, and we're going to be struggling. So stick with us. Just give us a second. But bear with us a little bit. We'll be back every single week. Again, Zachariah Cordova, Bradley Byrne behind the board. I have been Mahdi Dembele, and Pound for Pound is a production of WFUV Sports.